The 1895 podcast is brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. The 1895, the official Shelburne podcast, exclusive to Patreon.
The ball sinks in towards where Davy Rogers is up. Rogers sweeps the left!
I'm angry, Tony, I have to be honest.
Murray! Bartry Shelburne! Noel Murray! Has she won it for the Reds? What a goal!
Here's a chance up! Shane Farrell! At Chelsea 2-0!
I'm sorry, Tony, but I'm angry as well. I was angry before the game. I've been angry for a long time.
And she gets the winning goal here. Slattery! Oh. Into the back of the net! That is what champions do! That is what winners do! Pearl Slattery!
Over the top by Sullivan. Hughes, goal! Shelburne lead!
His cross, Stephen Regan!
Kilduffy is the substitute and he scored! Shell's lead!
We are in to the 94th minute and yeah! It's an over!
Shelburne FC! Our first division champion!
It's our just reward. We deserve this. We deserve this big time.
Here's your host, Stephen Doody.
Hello, welcome to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. And as always, we're brought to you in association with our proud media partners, Off the Ball. A special edition this week, as promised, we're joined by the first team manager, Damien Duff. Damien, how are you?
I'm okay, Steve. I've no news. I'm obviously in here because Darren's been putting me under the pump for 18 months to do Off the Ball and your podcast. And I've obviously decided to come in and speak to you guys.
Speaking of Darren, he's here as well to keep us on the straight and narrow. Dazzler, how are you?
How are you doing?
Not bad. Damien, how's your week been?
Life is a blur. What? I don't even know what day it is. It's Wednesday. Fine. Really low on bodies. We borderline just have a team probably at the minute available for Friday. Wednesdays today would always be my busiest day of the week because we always have a pre-match meeting on a Thursday. Obviously, tomorrow will always be about Cork. So on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, I usually just go underground and on the laptop for 2 days. So I'm taking time out to come in here.
We'll try not to keep you too long. So as we did with Jack, we had Jack Moylan here a couple of weeks ago. And just to get things rolling, we had a few icebreaker questions early on. They all right with you?
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. Your favourite sport outside of football?
Oof. I'm just such an anorak and just blinkers on. It's football. I don't really watch anything else, honestly.
That's a fair answer. Your favourite holiday destination?
South of France.
The person you look up to most?
My parents.
Your favourite takeaway?
I guess outside just normal everyday foods, I'd love a sushi.
Any superstitions as a player or manager?
I used to always put my left boot on, right boot, left shin guard, right shin guard. I would have OCD. I'd be going over lines in the road with my left foot, checking the door numerous times. That was as a player. I'm probably more relaxed now as a manager. Manager, I probably overthink maybe what I wear. If I lost in a pair of runners, I wouldn't wear them again, stuff like that.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Pub or nightclub?
Pub.
Drink of choice?
Guinness and red wine.
Your worst moment on a football pitch?
I was going to say, just because it came to mind, I think I was speaking to the lads about it the other day. I guess single-handedly got Newcastle relegated, but no, I won't go with that. It was, I guess, the only time I've ever cried on a football pitch is when we didn't qualify over in Paris, the Thierry Henry handball.
Your best moment on a football pitch?
As a player or as a coach?
As a player.
Anytime you pull the green jersey on, I think, yeah, it's nice. You bounce from club to club. You get paid, I guess, decent money. I was lucky enough to win a few medals in my time, but nothing pulls on the green shirt, especially at home.
And to finish off, what's the best part of a fry?
Of a fry?
Yeah.
I guess the toast and the butter, real butter.
There you go. That's an acceptable answer.
Would you have hash brown in a fry?
I would do, but it wouldn't be one of the first things. I'm just getting a bit conscious now as I get older. I used to love black pudding and yeah, a bit of hash brown and all, but Darren, they can't be good for you, can they? So when you're a player, you think you're absolutely invincible, but when you're, I think I'm 44, am I? Aches and pains everywhere, you start thinking about your general health. So, but now if I have to choose fry, be the butter on proper bread as well. Yeah.
Right, we'll jump all the way back. We'll go right back to when you were a kid. Where did the love of football come from? Was it a family thing? Where was the family into sport as well? Or was it just something you picked up?
I guess it was just my dad. He would have been a mad Man United fan. He played up until, I guess, amateur. I think he finished off with a bad back, something like that. I never got into the conversation whether he was any good. All I know is he's a left footer. From Crumlin, Sundrive Park on the corner of Rutland, so he'd know a lot of Joey and Quinner's friends, associates, family. But it was just that, and obviously the Man U, I'd watch the Man U video I had on VHS every day, so like even old goals now that you see a Bobby Charlton, George Best, Dennis Law, famous Man United games through the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, I'd know the commentary off by heart from all these goals, so that's how much I watched it.
So you were United mad as a kid, were you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you play any other sports or was it just always football?
I played rugby. I went to rugby playing school, De La Salle. I was a fullbacker and out half. And I actually left football for probably a year and a half. So I didn't play under 12 and under 13 football. I played rugby in school. But listen, obviously football was my first love. And at obviously 14, I guess, you get to kind of junior cup level. You're trying to tackle me heads, proper big boys. So I was like, I'm out here. So I signed for Lourdes Celtic and never looked back, I guess.
Was that through your dad's connection? It's obviously Crumlin way with Lourdes.
Yeah, I was obviously at Leicester for a good few years. Just, I don't know why. I can't really remember why. I just finished up, like I said, 18 months. It's mad when I look back. Like, I was just playing on the road. But you can argue I was still practicing more than any kid in the country that was at a club because, yeah, I watched me Man U VHS every day, but I literally, and it's what I always try to tell young players now, I was on the road every day with a ball for like hours on end.
There's loads of talk about that like street football is gone and you don't see kids, like gangs of kids out on the road anymore. Do you think that's something that's missing now in younger players?
I think so. And I don't know how it comes back or does a U-turn. I just think there's so many distractions. I think I was lucky that there was no PlayStations and phones, etc., etc. So I didn't really have anything else but a ball. And here, I was lucky enough to, I guess, have, like I was talking about with Joe the other day, you have to be lucky with what you're given, as in body-wise as well. So I had decent speed, I was nimble, happened to love football, didn't have any distractions. So I was lucky that it all kind of came together that way.
So what was that Lourdes Celtic team like as a kid? Was it a strong team? Were you one of the better teams around? Or
we would have been, yeah, but it wouldn't have been the team winning the league and what have you. Like Home Farm would have been I guess the better team, Cherry Orchards, but here, I loved it. We still laugh again because all our boys, I think Skins was crumbling as well, Quinner, Joey, you know, the ball goes down the hill at Sundrive Park and coming back for 90 odd seconds or so. But yeah, that's obviously how I ended up down there for 2 years. And then it was kind of a dream team get together. His name was Jimmy Hart. He took all the players at under 16 level from all the best teams around Dublin and had one season at St. Kevin's before I eventually went to Blackburn.
Was there ever talk of you going abroad at Lourdes, or did that only come about that year you moved to Kevin's then?
No, I think I was going on trial then. I remember it was always scouts. You always spot them during the long jackets down to the ankles. And the only two clubs I ever went to was obviously Blackburn and Huddersfield, which is a random one. Jerry Murphy, a proper Irish legend, he's been over at Huddersfield for years, but a lot of people would know him within the game now. He brought me over many times. Neil Warnock was manager at the time. He kind of scared me off, if honest. I was a bit rattled by him. But
what was he like?
Just scary. Quinner obviously loves him, tells some cracking stories about him. But I remember I was sent into the office to have lunch with him. I was about 14 and I was proper intimidated, like, and obviously different down at Blackburn. They were going for the league then at the time. They're probably the most glamorous club in England, obviously not history-wise, but Kenny Dalglish, brand new state-of-the-art training ground. So, of course, it wasn't that monetary then. You're just going over and you're getting 50, 100 quid a week at Huddersfield or Blackburn, but it just felt right. gone to Blackburn.
So did you go straight into the reserves at Blackburn, or was there like an underage team? Or
no, so over there, things changed now. It was a B team, which would have been 16s. Then you make it into the A team, which is about, I guess, under 18s, 19s. Then the reserves, and then the first team. And I did about a year with the B team, a few games with the A team. And then I just started getting in squads, getting on the bench. I actually went home. My season was over when I was 18. And I remember Tony Parks, he was the caretaker manager. I think Ray Harford, God rest his soul, passed away. He was the manager but left. And Tony called me back just for the last game of the season against Leicester City. I just thought I was going back again for the bench. And he just told me an hour beforehand, you're starting, you're making your debut.
Do you think that's a better way to do it, for it just to just be sprung on you like that, or would you have rather had a little bit of time to maybe prepare?
No, it's just, it probably is better. I've probably always overthought maybe things as coach and a manager. I think a lot. I just bounced back in, not caring the world. They brought my parents over with me, and he just told me, rather here, if you told me the day before, I'm probably not sleeping. So no, we went out, we lost 4-2, but I remember I got man of the match. It was one of the greatest days of my life.
What's it like going into a senior dressing room like that? The gap was probably bridged a little bit with the A team. I'm sure there's probably older players dropping down to play and stuff. But what's it like as like a kid from Dublin, and all of a sudden you're in England and you're going out to play in front of thousands and thousands of people?
I'm not saying I was born to do it. I wasn't. But I don't know. You're either made for it or you're not. You sink or swim. Sorry to hit you with cheesy lines. Like, so I remember I always tell a story when I was going on to, I guess, practically emigrate, leave my mum, my dad, my brothers and sisters, and I'm 16, and it's, I remember, June, so I'm going over for my first ever training session with Blackburn, but I'm moving away from home, effectively, and I'm crying at the front door, and my mum's crying, brothers and sisters are waving me off. My mum said to me, you know, son, you can come back whenever you want. And I was 16 and didn't say boo, really shy, naive, a mammy's boy. And she tells the story, she told me, I said to her, don't worry, Mum, I won't be back. So that's that. Obviously, I guess maybe it's ingrained in you. It's an edge. I always say to the young lads, I call it a mongrel. Just being a... So like I said, I was really just a big softy, but I had that bit of mongrel inside, obviously, that I said to me, Mum, I ain't coming back.
And even when you got there, there was no doubt in your mind that you were going to leave. This was for you, no matter.
I know, like, there's having an edge and having a mongrel, but then having that, I guess, air, arrogance and confidence. I never had that. I wouldn't think I have it even now as a coach, a manager. And certainly after, was it the end of the first season? I was just gone 17. I wanted to come back. We lived in an old mental home. That's where the new glamorous training ground was. So every week all the English guys would go home, the British, the Scottish, the Welsh. And there'd literally be just two of us left in a little house on the hill. It was like a haunted house. And we'd be on our own for 48 hours, literally, until they came back the Monday morning. So after about 6, 7, 8 months, I was like, oh, I've had enough of this. So I remember I went into Kenny and Tony Parks and Ray, and they were amazing, and Alan Irvine. And he says, no, you're not going. We'll bring your parents over. So they flew my parents over, and I think they were supposed to stay for a week. And after 2, 3 days, I was like, nah, listen, I'm good here. I'm ready to crack on. And that's the way it was. So, yeah, I lived at the training ground. I think it's changed a lot in the UK now. They want you away from the training grounds. They want you away from football. Whereas I lived at the training ground. I lived and breathed and just ate, drank football. I'd finish, we'd do our jobs. So we'd have to clean the whole training ground. I think you're not allowed, I think it's illegal over there to ask a young boy to do a job. I love it, the learning in it. I used to clean first team players' boots, Tim Sherwood, the captain. Again, you're not allowed to do that over now.
You did Tim Sherwood's boots?
Yeah, he made my life hell. But again, I wouldn't change it. It was every morning I'd hear Daffa and this Cockney accent, get the effing hell in here, and what's wrong? I just polish on my hands when I'm tying my laces. But he knew he was doing it, I guess, in a nice way, a bit of character building. He must have thought, okay, Duffer might have a bit of talent here. Let's, you know, get on him a bit. So yeah, we used to clean the whole place from top to bottom, and then I'd be back in the gym or outside playing head tennis till all hours. So I lived at a training ground, and I'd only leave once a week to go to college, or twice a week if I had an away game. Otherwise, I didn't leave.
You had like no stats XG, hadn't become a big part of football yet. Was it more enjoyable, no social media? You could just enjoy being a footballer instead of all the noise and trappings that are there now?
Yeah, I think I first really and I might have been out before, but yeah, I'm still not on social media. Obviously, I think it was when I was at Fulham, maybe early days Fulham, and Twitter was starting to come out and all, but I still never went on it. You know, you read a good comment, you probably feel a million, and then all it takes is someone to nail you and you're moping around. So I don't see the benefit of social media. I really detest them. If any player, any of my our players, I'd tell them not to be on it. So yeah, there was a real, I guess, innocence about me, and I'd always say I probably lost that innocence and fearlessness as I got older, because I don't know, maybe there's more pressure in the game or have you. I put too much pressure on myself, but definitely when you're 18, 19, 20, early 20s, you don't have a care in the world. You say, yeah, I'm just playing on a public park here, and you're not.
With, you mentioned there Tim Sherwood, and you obviously cleaned his boots. When you eventually get into the first team and you're a regular, does that relationship instantly change? Are you one of the lads all of a sudden then? Or is there still a, hang on, Duffer's still a kid?
No, like they, that's what I'd been like now, I guess, with the lads. Like I would have been 17, 18, and they'd be taking me out on nights out and getting really drunk and what have you. So, listen, it wasn't as if I was... you know, a large part shouting and screaming. I was always quiet in the dressing room. I like to think I just led by my actions. So whether it be 18, 19, breaking into Blackburn first team, then Chelsea, Newcastle, Fulham, I always would have been quiet. Yeah, have a laugh and all, but wouldn't be in a screamer and a shouter. But now from day one, when was it, 18, 19, breaking into the first team, yeah, you're in the squad, you're playing, right? You're coming on a night out and we're getting you drunk.
Do you remember your first Ireland call-up?
I do, yeah. I played injured for my first few caps. I had a hernia, but just I was always bad at that, being, I guess, dishonest. Duffer, do you feel grand? Yeah, I feel great. But I remember I had a hernia, needed an operation, but you couldn't turn down an Ireland call-up. So, yeah, I think it was about 7 or 8 new caps over in Czech Republic. I think we lost 1-0. That was about it. I don't think I played particularly well. I don't think I played particularly well probably for my first 10-plus caps for Ireland.
Can you even get close to putting into words what it's like to play for your country when you stand out there and the national anthem starts to play? Like, is there any way of explaining it to the likes of me and Darren?
Oof, I'm not sure. I guess there's just no greater feeling in the world. Like you said, I won a couple of leagues with Chelsea. Great, amazing. Not many Irishmen, I guess, can say that. But still, nothing beats just the national anthem. I've cried many a time. I always used to close my eyes and go off to another place. Probably people thought, who's this weirdo? But here, I don't know. It's just, it's in your blood, your DNA, every fibre of your body. So there's not many people that get the chance to, I guess, represent their country at football. So everywhere, everything else is down after that, you know.
When you got that first cap, did you think you'd stay? Did you think you were in the team and I'll get loads of these caps? Like, did you ever think you'd go on to get the 100?
No, I never got carried away with anything, even, like I said, winning a couple of leagues or having a good game. I was just always kind of flatline. I never got up or down. So one cap that I think, listen, I'm not stupid. I know we were hyped up with the likes of myself, Robbie, probably even me before Robbie, because we went to Malaysia and we came third in the world, incredible. But I mean, was never one to believe hype or Damien's this, Damien's that. I'd always just probably be more hard on myself. I'd just go the opposite way. So no, I never thought, here, you're going to bag out 100.
So going to 2002, obviously we qualified for the World Cup, and like I remember as a kid, like the whole country came to a standstill for 2002. But when you're so far away like that, have you any semblance of what's going on at home, or are you just completely tunnel vision? I'm here to play in the World Cup and that's it.
It'd just be tunnel vision. And even with the Roy thing, I remember everyone was getting carried away. Like, all my eyes were on was just playing the World Cup. Footballers are especially selfish people, I guess. So, yeah, it was a big story, Roy, the whole World Cup. But I was just concentrating on myself, to be brutally honest. So, and listen, at the time, again, you're talking about social media there a second ago, Steve. It wasn't around. Like, so you're probably just getting, you know, on these big screens in front of me. If you wanted to find out, you were going online on an old computer, which again didn't interest me. So I probably slept a lot. That was probably because I was rooming with Matty Holland, brutal banter.
It's funny though, you like when you talk about that, like I think even the newspaper that caused the issue, the interview, that had to be faxed over That was the times they were living.
Yeah, that's the machine I was trying to get there. Yeah, fax machine.
Someone went out of their way.
Yeah, I remember. I remember Mick was carrying it around with him. So yeah, that's what it was. I guess we were behind the rest of the world. Was it 10, 12 hours difference? I don't know. So you'd get everything the next day. But it never, like I said, interested me, just whether it be doing interviews, reading reports. I like to think I'm very self-aware as a person when I was a player and also now as a coach. Am I doing a good job? Am I doing a bad job? Am I being hard on the players? What do they need? I'd like to think I'd have a good sixth sense.
The Saipan story's been done to death now. Look, everyone knows the ins and outs of it, but what would you as a manager have thought of it? Like you said there as a player, you just got on with it. You were there to play. But looking back on it now as a manager, do you think you would have looked at it differently? Would you have taken Roy's side or would you have been on Mick McCarthy's side, do you think?
Oh, no, listen, you'd have to totally agree with Roy. Yeah, listen, it has been done to death. At the time, we were, I guess, young and just happy-go-lucky. Myself, Robbie, Richie, you know, Shay. So we were probably laughing at the whole debacle of the thing. But yeah, listen, as a manager now, obviously totally not acceptable at the time. And yeah, you see why Roy went off one. And I guess that's why many people admire him so much, because his standards were so high. Whereas probably at the time, like I said, I didn't even have a standard, if you know what I mean. I was just like, football, 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 let's play, whether it be a concrete pitch, which wasn't far off, or a nice pitch. Yeah. I'm just sick. I'm careful what I say because I hate making a paper with a headline or a soundbite, etc. So I don't want to say something that Duffer says Saipan, because I always look at ex-players talking about it. I'm like, fucking, here we go again. So yeah, it was a disaster. Yeah,
that there's nearly like an aloofness about you with playing, that you were just there to play. You wanted to play all the time. Do you think that helped you get to the level you got to? That, maybe, not saying you didn't feel pressure, but you were just wanted to be on the pitch constantly, you wanted to train constantly, be near the ball. Do you think that helped you get to the top?
I think just love of football. Like, I don't know, yeah, you're saying getting the ball, comfortable on the ball. Like, again, just for, I don't know, if young lads listen to this, I think young lads in the League of Ireland now, in the 15s, 17s, 19s, and they might do two sessions a week, three sessions a week, and they play on a Saturday, they think that's enough to be a footballer. It's not, like, it's nowhere near. So let's say it's three sessions of an hour or 90 minutes. That's about 4 hours, 4.5 hours of training, touching a ball. And because they're with 19 other players, they're hardly touching the ball, whereas I spend 2-3 hours a day, every day, on my own, out in the road. So that's 20 hours. So it's not possible for the player that's doing 4 hours to be as good as me, who's doing 20 hours. I'm sorry if that sounds arrogant, but it's not. So I always put probably too much pressure on me. And like I said, as I got older, I definitely lost that fearlessness. I probably played with more fear. I was all about keeping the ball rather than dribbling and maybe losing the ball. So yeah, maybe early days, Steve, yeah, I didn't have a care in the world, but I certainly did mid, late 20s, early 30s. I definitely changed as a player.
Jumping ahead a bit, when you came back here and you were coaching and you were involved in the academy in Rovers, I remember being involved in schoolboy football at the time, and the idea of kids going in before school and training, and then like the amount of contact hours that Rovers started to put in place, that was completely foreign to hear. People thought it was mad. And were you aware of that kind of noise around the whole situation at the time?
I remember there was a couple of articles or something, you'd always hear whispers. So again, I wouldn't be on social media, but I wouldn't change it for the world. There's a lot of players out at 18, 90 that have actually got careers at the minute. And not even for the coaching they got off me, but just the standards we put in them. So yeah, we'd five near on 2 hour sessions a week, which is up to 10, just all ball, technique, intensity, tempo. And Tuesdays were the best days. So we'd start at, I think, 6:30, finish at 8:00. And on the way, I'd stop at a Circle K and I'd buy all the 20 young players. I'd buy them a packed lunch. So it cost me about £100. I'd be buying them drinks, protein bars, bananas, whatever. But literally 6:30 in the morning, they're on the pitch. I had to open up the whole of Roadstone, put the lights on. And on 6:30, like I said, start. They'd soon wake up because we'd be screaming at them. Lukey'd be there with me. Incredible. And if you ask Evan Caffrey now, I'd like to think, I think he does say the same. But they were the best sessions of the week, Tuesday, 6:30, unbelievable. And we'd be back 12 hours later for another 2-hour session. We'd rent out an Astro, again, just off our own back. But again, just talking about the, I guess, the education, sorry to go off points, it's just fresh in my mind. So Evan, who was 14, he was my captain at the time. And with us, I know everybody thinks, oh, Duffer, Joey, you know, we're like dictators, or it's all about us we're down there. It's certainly not. So we give the players a voice. So every game before we get in the huddle, 3 minutes before we go out, and the player takes the team talk. So Evan did it the other day, and we asked him before the game. It was no problem. But it was no problem to him because he's been doing them since he was 14. So even when we were the under-15s with Rovers, he was taking team talks in a huddle. And it's gold us for him. You can see people growing off it. We've had some amazing ones along the way. Evan on Friday night before Dundalk was absolutely outstanding. Some real emotional stuff has been spoken over the last 18 months. And then at halftime again, I'll always pat someone on the shoulder, right, you're taking it. So it's you'd be surprised how intimidating and nerve-wracking it is. I got it from Chelsea with, again, sorry to go off point, but Mourinho used to do it. We were told you're taking the team talk. Brendan took it, because Brendan Rodgers was obviously at Chelsea, he took it to Celtic. So a lot of managers do it. If you look at the TV now, I think it's all or nothing. Mourinho still does it with Spurs, etc. So we do it. So the players have a voice with us, contrary to popular belief. Ev did it the other day, and he was very much a part of them 6 o'clock sessions, and I wouldn't and he wouldn't change them for the world.
I think Arsenal got their photographer one time to do it.
Yeah.
One of those all or nothing. When you look at that now, and like there's probably are one or two shy lads within the squad, is that the kind of thing that helps them come out of their shell and build them as people as well as players, that just ability to be able to take something on like that?
Ah, without a doubt. Like, I remember having to do it, and Steve Clark, Jose's assistant, would tell you before the game, you'd be going out for the warm-up and you'd be like, holy mother of God, here I go. And you'd be thinking up some lyrics. But like I said, you can just see the players grow. But listen, I probably need to be harder. I know the lads will listen to this. I've asked 3 or 4 or 5 of the lads, some of them are still here over the last 18 months, and they said no. Whereas at Chelsea with us, we were told we were doing it. So that's what I loved about Evan the other night. Yeah, no problem, I'll do that. And he's just in the door and he's 20 years of age. So yeah, certainly they grow. Another thing we've done, because I think we're a strange squad. I've told the lads that, I've told yous that. I think we're a quiet squad. They know what I think of them. So at the start of the season, we did a thing called 7 questions. 7 really random questions. They were hard hitting, funny, whatever. And they all had to do it, including the staff. And it went on for about 3 weeks. We do 3 every day. One of the questions would be, tell a funny story about yourself. One would be the hardest day of your life, your biggest fear. So there was literally some tears in the room at times, but they were amazing. And yeah, it was for us to know each other and all get a feel for each other. But it was also for to get people to talk and give them that confidence to talk. Like Shane Farrell, I haven't heard him speak in 18 months. So yeah, he had no choice but to do the 7 questions. And that was amazing. Really emotional, and it definitely bonded everyone, staff and players, and certainly the team talks as well. Evan the other night, you could tell the lads were buzzing off him doing it.
How important is it to let them, you know, be people and enjoy the football? I know, like, some managers, there's always talk, when Wenger came into Arsenal, he banned Mars bars and ketchup, where your team seem to appreciate a night out when they get a weekend off. How important is it to give them enough space to develop a bit of friendship and bring the group closer together?
I guess it's always a fine line. Like, I know I'd be hard hitting with standards and just creating the environment and just being on it every day. There was certainly a point last year, I think it was around June, July, and you just got the feeling off them that, fuck me, I've had enough of Hughes Law. So consciously, again, it's like what I said a second ago, that sixth sense. I was like, we're going to need to come off them here. And well, for me, that's what a top level environment is, and that's what I've tried to bring to the club. Yeah, I want them to enjoy their football and go out and play with freedom, but there also has to be pressure as well. That's why I put the pressure on them for to succeed individually as a collective. What's their aims this season? And yeah, like, no Mars bars, whatever, each to their own. I encourage a night out. So before, what was it, Rovers, the nil all game 4 or 5 weeks ago, I said to them, sometimes it's not about tactics, whatever. So I said, if you win tonight, I'll take you out wherever you want to go. Davey went in with a suggestion box a couple of weeks after. So some of the suggestions, they were, sorry, it was, I was obviously paying for the night out, which ain't cheap, trust me, when you're bringing out 20, 25 lads and they're getting pissed, and Paddy Barrett,
hide them somewhere.
Yeah, Paddy Barrett's on double whiskies before seven, it soon adds up. But they obviously didn't win that night when I promised, here, I'll take us out. So I said, listen, I'll give you a rollover. You beat Cork next week, I'll take us out. So I've never seen a gang so motivated to get 3 points. So yeah, we read the suggestion box out straight after the game in Cork. Again, different. Sometimes we come in, talk tactics. Yeah, great, well done. So it was a bit of banter. We read out some of them, and there was, here, not for your ears maybe, some of the suggestions, but pretty boring night. We ended up in Buskers about 2 weeks ago. It cost me an arm and a leg, I won't lie to you. They were out all day, and they just played pool and darts and ping pong for the night and got absolutely smashed. But yeah, that's, I guess, bonding. I'm still trying to find. I woke up the next day and I was so drunk I can't remember who was doing it to me, but I had bruises all over my arms and like my pecs and kind of my hips and my side of my body. And I just remember someone just kept pinching me all night. It was one of the players, obviously.
Any
and someone
suspects?
I was so drunk I couldn't remember. And I said to the staff, I said to the skins, who was pinching me? I don't know. So here, one of them might tell me now because I haven't actually asked them. So I woke up a few grand lighter in my pocket and with bruises all over me.
That's going to be one of the questions for the players now, isn't it, when they come in here? Who was the one that pinched the manager?
Yeah, numerous times, bruises everywhere. So
Sign of a good night.
It is, yeah. How important is the trust with that? Like you say, you're happy for the players to have a night out and the time is right. Is it one of those things where if something happens on a night out, that's it? It's knocked them the head altogether? Or is it just you kind of running that risk anyway?
No, you're running the risk. I don't think you can tell lads not to go out. So, listen, I think our lads are really clever. They couldn't go out on a Sunday because we train hard. Like, so, and obviously they'd be punished in some way. But you couldn't come in and train with us with hangovers after having a few because you wouldn't get away with it. So, no, boys will be boys. If they go out on the Saturday night, we usually have Sunday off. If something happens, here, I can't hold their hand through life. So, if something happens, it happens.
How soon, coming to the end of your playing career, how soon did you realise, right, I want to get into the coaching end of things? Or were you doing it as you were playing as well?
No, I'd never planned. So, like, I'd encourage, I guess, people if they're half interested. So Coyler, Griff, they did their B recently. Coyler's gone in with the 15s, which I think is goalless for him. Lukey's obviously been with me for years, Rovers, Shells, but I never had a plan. I retired, could have banged out another year, but I just thought, here, good luck. Finished up, and not that I was partying every night for 4 or 5 months, but yeah, you start having a bottle of red on a Tuesday, maybe on the Monday and the Wednesday as well, and carrying that on for a few months, like I said. And I think I was retired in December and I hit maybe March, April, and I was like, what the hell are you doing with your life here? You've nothing really to get out of bed for in the morning except for your two kids. You drop them to school and you might go back to bed because I love sleep. So I remember there was a 2 week intensive B coming up in June, and I signed up for that, not because I didn't want to be a coach, I never wanted to do punditry. There was two things that probably scared me most, because I don't like speaking in front of people. I don't like being in the public eye. So there are two things that would have been bottom of my list. Did the B, probably the worst on it, along with Hunty. Stephen Hunt was on it. He was just as bad as me. But obviously did it. I can't even say I got the bug, but just maybe the ego taking over. It's like, you need to be better at this. You've played for 25 years and you're fucking shit. Like. So did the B, did the A, did the Elite U or whatever it's called, and did the Pro, and I probably ended up semi-decent. Again, it's not for me to say. So, yeah, I'd never planned. It was just kind of fell into it because I thought, you're doing nothing with your life here.
How did they move from, obviously, the academy and Rovers to Shells? How did that come about?
Well, it was obviously via Celtic. So I finished playing at Rovers, and it was probably Stephen Bradley that got me into it. He asked me back as a coach just to help him out when he took the gig. So I went back as a non-paying coach. I just thought, here, I'll just help you out and get me out of house. So that's the thing when you, I guess, you offer your services and you're, I guess, don't have a contract, I guess nobody can sack you. So it was just kind of like a freelancing coach that was probably a crap coach. But so yeah, I guess I kind of came half interested with him. Did the B, the under 15s League of Ireland was starting up, so I just asked him, here, do you mind if I do this? No, brilliant. I says, okay, well, I'm leaving you though. So I put my heart and soul into them guys, as you know, Tuesdays, the double sessions, but I gave them everything 24/7, 5, 6, 7 days a week, and did it for whatever, a year, 12, 14 months, I don't know. And I don't know how it come about to this day, but Celtic kind of headhunted me in a way for the reserve team coach. I thought I had the gig, the way they were kind of speaking. And when I eventually spoke to Chris McCarthy, it was like, no, you need to do an interview for it. And I was like, oh my God, right, this is nerve-wracking.
Is that your first job interview in football?
Yeah, and again, I didn't want to go for it. But Brad's and Glenn and Stephen Mack, were like, here, go here, Elaine, my wife, she's always been brilliant, whether it be going to Australia as a player or Scotland. She goes, no, fucking go, do it. So I was up against 10, 12, I don't know, even more other candidates. And you had to put on a presentation in front of Brendan and all the academy staff, John Kennedy, wonderful coach. I had to go out on the pitch, coach all the miserable reserve team players that don't want to be in an afternoon and have a bit of a chip on their shoulder and certainly don't want to be coached by me, someone they don't know. So I had to do that. The most nerve-wracking thing I've ever done in my life, totally out of the comfort zone. But literally walking off the pitch, Brendan says, that's the best we've had, you'll get it. Like, so I got offered a job, whatever, 3-4 days later. And again, I was like, will I do this or what? Like, I have to take the kids to Scotland, Elaine. Everyone just told me to go. So I'd always have big doubts about myself as a player and then a manager, a coach. So, okay, let's go. So I ended up going to Celtic. Lasted there a year and a half. Sorry to go off thing here, but this is how I ended up with Shells. It was through Celtic. Was there a year and a half, 1-8, 1-9 in a row. I'm not saying I played a big part, but it was like getting it crammed in, I guess, 5-6 year master course in 18 months with some of the best coaches and analysts in the world. And so obviously Woody, he was always saying, so sorry, they came over for 6-7 months, but I just wanted to get them home. Lane wanted to get them home. So they went back home to Ireland. I was there on my own. And Woody was always saying, you know, Dad, you need to stay for 9 and 10. So because he was signed up for it. He used to go around school. I think that's when Lane started thinking, we need to get these kids out here. Obviously, Woody wouldn't know, you know, the proper rivalry and the history and the politics and religion with Celtic Rangers. Woody would be going around the school in Glasgow singing Bye Bye Rangers and... And I'm like, well, you can't be singing that. And he's like, why? And I was like, well, you don't really know to know why. So Elaine was like, we're getting him out of here. So but he proper fell in love with the whole thing. So he's like, Daddy, you need to stay for 9 and 10. I'd be coming home. I'd see them once a week for a couple of hours. It was so hard. And that used to always tug at my heartstrings. But he'd say, stay for 9 and 10. But after 5-6 months, it wasn't, will you stay for 9 and 10? He started saying, when are you coming home? And that just got me. So I was like, listen, good luck. So we did 9 and I came home. Got the Ireland gig, as you know, 7-8 months was in that. But I wanted to coach while I was to stay sharp. So I don't know, it was through Lukey, who I think got on to David Henderson, Stephen Henderson. And I said, I just want to coach and keep sharp and stay on the pitch and just help kids because it's coaching, it's managing. But I got all the help. And I like helping people. So I ended up at Shells and, yeah, a roundabout way. That's how I went from Rovers to Shells. It's via Celtic in Ireland, I guess.
Are you glad you went the grassroots way? Because a lot of people that had your playing career, your CV, like, it's not untold to sit around and wait for a cushy number from a former club, and they happen for a lot of players. Like, they'll get a gig. You went and attacked it and did it all on your merit. Are you glad you went that way instead of kind of waiting around for someone to just give you a job for being Damien Duff?
Ah, for sure. I wouldn't change it for the world. Made some amazing relationships along the way. With maybe young players, staff, player, whatever. So, and you're learning the game all over again. Like, you think you know it. Ex-players think they know the game inside out. They don't. Like, so you're in the pitch, you're in the mix, you're just looking after number one, whereas all of a sudden you're on the touchline, you're looking after squads, you're trying to dissect the game. You just have to look at it totally different. So for sure, I would not change it for the world, starting with the youth. And I love it, yeah. It's the way to go.
everyone always talks about the work ethic that the whole staff has at the moment, and particularly you. Was that a strange thing when you came to Shells, and obviously you were with the 17s and there's no full-time academy football or anything like that here? Was that a strange thing that you were obviously full-time? You were treating it as full-time, but maybe the players aren't and players are coming and going. Is that a difficult thing to get your head around?
Not really. I just get so, transfixed and just go into my own little world. So, like, Shells 17s, Rovers 15s was the biggest job in the world to me. Shells 17s was the biggest job in the world to me. It sounds cheesy, but it was. So, yeah, it was 24-7. Like, I'd be doing Zoom calls with lads on a couple of nights a week, and especially during COVID. And here it's a hard school, it's learning. I remember Bemmy, who scored against Dundalk a couple of weeks ago at Oriel Park. Yeah, listen, he's got potential. But I remember he was late for the Zoom call, so I wouldn't let him in. You know, there's the waiting room. So I wouldn't let anyone that was ever late from. They were just, you could see them waiting. Will you let them in? But I wouldn't let them in. Quinner will tell you that. It was 24-7. I'd always push. So Stephen would have been brilliant with me, Stephen Mulhern. I was like, Steve, I need a pitch. I need to go offside. I need an extra pitch in the AOL. I want to train 4 or 5 times a week. I want to do this, want to do that. And he always helped me because, here, was I getting paid for it? No, I was just volunteering. It's an absolute trek from where I live to out to the AOL every day. But again, I just loved it. Loved seeing the staff, Lukey, Quinner. And then you build a real bond with the players. So even DT, here he was our captain with the 17s for 2 years running and making his competitive Premier Division debut the other night. Was amazing for him, the club, the academy, but for me as well, because I've seen him the whole way through. So, any job is 24-7 to me, heart in the sleeve stuff. I'm probably too much for people, I know that, but here, I can't change. So,
does that intensity put people off, do you think? Do you think with you, is it a sink or swim type thing? Either people row in behind it or it's just not for them?
People that have come and obviously joined the squad and staff, they've all rolled in behind. But I remember an agent, a big agent in this country, he warned me when I was speaking to players, you know, he's going, calm down, tell them it's going to be fun and great laugh. They don't want them standards, they'll be scared. And I was like, nah, that can't be right. But after speaking to players maybe for the last year and a half, there might be something in it, I don't know. But again, whether it be Ireland, Scotland, wherever I am, I believe the environment that I've tried to create with the Joey, the rest of the staff, is an environment that's elite. And if it's, you don't fancy it, well, it's not for you then.
Were you following the first team's fortunes while you were the 17s manager, or were you just pigeonholed on kind of what you were doing?
Not really. Like, I wouldn't have went to games or anything like that. Wouldn't have known really any of the players at all, and that is what I always did, even at Rovers. Of course, I would have checked on the results more because of relationship with Brad's, but no, it's just 17s all or nothing. So even when I was at, I remember being at Celtic and like the Premier League, the biggest league in the world, like sometimes I wouldn't know what games or results have happened at the weekend because I'm all about Scottish football. Likewise here, you know, League of Ireland now, the senior stuff, you'd lose track of maybe what's happening in the Prem. And it was exactly the same with Shell 17s. It's like, yeah, boom, okay, what's the other results? The Pats 17s won today, blah, blah, blah. You wouldn't really know what's going on outside of that.
So when does the approach happen for the first team job with Shells? When did that become a whisper or a possibility, do you remember?
Brutal with stuff like this. I don't know, I think Andrew maybe asked me. I was just like, nah, don't even speak to me, whatever, I'm no interest, Shell 17, so I don't know the time or whatever. And then I think maybe Ian had left or was in the process of leaving, so, you know, people might even think, oh, Damon's, because I would think that, oh, Damon's loitering around in the academy, you know, over Ian's shoulder waiting for his, it was never, like, I didn't want to, because I probably didn't back myself being a first team manager. So Ian obviously left, Andrew, Doc, Alan Caffrey, Brian McGovern, I remember meeting him down in Brian's office in town. It's like, will you do it, blah blah. I spoke to them, I presented maybe what I could bring to them, but I kind of went away again. I was like, this ain't for you, and it's, you're not going to be shit and lacking real belief in it. So I remember where I was, I come out of Heiden Boxing Academy in Sandyford, I think I was just doing a boxing workout, I'm really bad by the way, and I think I rang Doc and Caff. I was like, listen, I can't do this. And they obviously rang Andrew Doyle, and he just pestered me over the weekend. He says, listen, take a couple of days. And that's obviously where the U-turn. But the time frame, I don't know. But yeah, that's the one thing I guess always eats away at me is Damien's, you know, lingering in the background, gagging for someone's job. It was never the case. I just was 17 and nothing else.
Where does that doubt come from? You said yourself, as you moved on in your career, like you kind of lost the carefree thing. You were thinking a little bit more. Where does that attitude come from? The kind of, oh, this isn't for me, or I won't be able for this. Does that stem from anything in particular, do you think? Or is it just something that came about?
No, I guess it's just, I guess, life, and as your career probably being scarred by certain events or whatever, and you doubt yourself maybe at times. I don't know. Just, I'd always be pessimistic rather than optimistic. Obviously not to the players. I'm, you know, always upbeat and, you know, getting them to believe. But listen, I don't know. And obviously the coach and the management thing, and telling Andrew and the staff. And listen, I'm so grateful to Andrew for putting that trust in me. I'll forever be grateful. It's the greatest probably decision I've made in my life, because it's something, I've said it many times before, people are probably sick of hearing it, but it's the most out of the comfort zone thing I've ever done and ever will do, because football, like I said, was just, here, give me a ball, no bother, see you later. Go manage Shelburne Football Club. Oof. Jeez, I don't know about that. That's why it's the best decision I've made.
How hard is it, like, as a player, you're focused on yourself. You can go into that bubble. You can be a bit selfish. As a manager, you're focused on everything. You're focused on, you know, 20 players. You're focused on your staff. You're focused on your support staff. You're the people who are there around you. How difficult is that kind of change of tact, going from just looking after yourself to being the person who has to look after everyone?
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, 20 minutes ago there, it's called coach and management, but I do like helping people. So I'm saying footballers are really selfish people. Yeah, how they prepare, I'm going to bed, I'm not going out, yeah, I'm not seeing my mum and dad, laying up with the kids, and now I'm going to bed, I've got a game. So selfish in that point of view, but regards to me, like, I love helping our players. So if they've stuff outside, not that I get off on it, because stuff outside is usually an issue, but I hope they'd tell you and back me up here that I just like helping people in general. That's the type of guy I am. So I could near on go through every player in the team. I'm just thinking I'm here in my own head. Like, I've near on done something outside the pitch for all of them, I think.
You talk about the full focus that football gives you, and after you finished up playing, like, it was hard to find that reason outside of the family. Was international football suited to that compared to what you have with Shells, where there's something every day, where international football you might see people relatively rarely?
Oh yeah, I couldn't. It's day in, day out for me, that constant and building a real bond with your players and together, and just seeing them every day and working with them every day. The international football here, I don't know what will happen in the future. And I don't mean with the Irish team, I mean anywhere. Working internationally or whatever, I have to see players every day. I have to bounce up out of bed every day. Whereas the international gig, it would have been, you're getting up just to watch video and be on a laptop and be on your own all day. So now, day in, day out, only one winner.
You've bought into the club culture. I think a lot of Shells fans would agree. The likes of yourself, Luke, you would know people outside the first team, obviously staff, volunteers, people around the club. Is that a big difference between kind of the League of Ireland and maybe the likes of England or Scotland? Are players kind of shielded from what a club, and it might make it a bit harder to buy in? Because I'd imagine that, you know, a Chelsea or a Fulham or a Newcastle, people are going out of their way to make sure no one's bothering you, where at a Shells, everyone's onto you.
Yeah, I guess so. And I guess maybe over in the UK and the money in the Premier League and all, the egos are so massive, they maybe don't want to speak to people, but... No, back here, like, even, I don't know why, we're going up to Drogheda in a couple of weeks. What was it, Lockie's Corner or Leckie's Corner? Yeah, is the next kit man? He must have passed away, didn't he? Like, every club has them, and I think we were speaking about it the other day. Like, even the likes of Johnny, the Watsons, clubs in Ireland are nothing without these people. Clubs are nothing without yourself, Darren, yourself, Stephen. So I'm very respectful of, you know... I guess you're doing it for nothing. I'm not asking you if you're going to pay.
I'm not doing it for nothing. I'll tell you, there's no
here, secret. I've said to Andrew many times, I do this for nothing, but he'll probably take me up on that, Andrew. But especially in Ireland, listen, the clubs in this country are built on the likes of his people. And even Steve Mulhern, I'm not sure even what role he has. I don't know if he has a role, but I couldn't do this job without Steve. And so I'm so appreciative of the help that I've got of everyone. Again, the Watsons, they have their own lives, everything, their own jobs, but anything we ever ask of them, you know, it's done. Yourself, Daz, every Thursday we speak, and I've asked you that issue a couple of weeks ago. I'm annoying you on a Saturday. So yeah, like I said, we're lost without you guys.
That first year, your first year as a senior manager, the first game was obviously we played Pats at home and it was on RTE and it was a massive build-up to it. What do you remember that week? Were the nerves starting to kick in, or were you confident that we were prepared enough, or how did you feel in that week?
I was just so nervous. I don't probably think, oh, here's Duffer again. And it comes with the job, I guess, of being a footballer and then a coach, a manager, whatever. You're in the limelight and the media and what have you, but I actually don't like being out there in the front and central. So yeah, the Pats game live on TV, I was a nervous wreck. The most nervous I've ever been on a touchline or involved. Obviously, really disappointing result. I remember being really proud of the guys because it wasn't a 3-0 game. But yeah, it's always that one. How's it going to go? It's my head on the block here. People wanting you to win. A lot of people wanting you to lose. So I've just been really, really nervous. Whereas walk on 18 months, I guess, from now, and I'm absolutely totally fine and calm. But yeah, that first night, I was, yeah.
How would you reflect on that, on the first season as a whole?
I don't know. I guess just content. I know, listen, the remit for me, nobody even had to tell me upstairs, was just stay up. And listen, I know I've spoken in the media a lot, and Matty has referenced it, of course, Europe, that has to be your aim, whether we deserved or have a right to talk about it. You have to aim for the stars, like I said the other day, but probably more importantly, and it might sound a bit of a contradiction, but we need to stay in the Premier Division again. So I'm not, you know, that egotistical, get carried away, we're going for Europe. We need to stay in the division. Okay, if we're going to stay in the division, can we stay up for the second year running? But no, last year, yeah, we stayed up. We got to the cup final. I know an awful lot of people, probably a mixture, maybe, oh, great day out, Shells back in the big time, back in people's eyes, I guess. I wasn't disappointed at all, like I said to you after the game. 10-foot tall walking in, 10-foot tall walking out. Somebody said, biggest, I think it's fact, is it the biggest result of all time, the cup final. Again, does not bother me whatsoever, because I think the learning in it for, staff, but just the players and how they'll grow off the back of it, I just think is absolutely priceless. It's gold. So, content, but I'm never really happy, whether it be a training session, an individual performance. That's probably why Jack hates me. I'm like, Jack scored, he's got man the match, whatever. No, Jack, you need to be better. That's the way I am. I just always want more. So yeah, happy enough. But yeah.
Did you get any time off after the cup final, or did that intensity kick in and were you just straight back planning for next year? Did you take any time out at all?
No, I was gone after the cup final. Body, mind, soul, a lot. I was a broken man, not because of the result, just the season, just wore myself to the bone. So I remember even on the cup final, I don't know what Mero gave me the day before. He was dying with a bit of flu and it kind of kicked in with me. So in the cup final, I just felt rotten. I was on everything, all legal, by the way. But so it started to kick in. I was in pieces for weeks. I didn't speak to anyone. It was just awful. So that intensity and, let's go again. Now I needed to kind of give myself a good talking to.
Have you maybe learned this year that maybe to take the foot off the gas a little bit during the season, just so you don't come to that point at the end of the season where you're burnt out maybe?
Possibly, yeah. And listening to that eagerness and naivety, like I spoke about Wednesdays at the start, like the Tuesdays, Wednesdays, I would just go underground on a laptop for 10 hours a day. But even that, I've come off it because I always felt every Thursday, maybe last year, and the lads would be thinking, probably here we go again. I was probably trying to reinvent the wheel, show them everything. So this Friday, we're playing Cork, and I'd feel as if I need to tell them near on the, not tell them, it's all visuals with me, because they don't need to listen to my crap, but show them just everything, everything, everything. But sometimes less is more. Too much water kills the flower, as Jose used to tell me when I was doing too much. So, me Tuesdays and Wednesdays now would be a lot calmer. I guess I work a lot smarter, if you guess, and probably try to show them less on a Thursday.
Did you enjoy the first year?
In a strange way, I'll always say in a strange way, it's amazing, focused. I remember Paul O'Connell, it's the one thing that resonated with me since I retired, a real big line. People miss maybe getting their ego massaged or the money they earn or the spotlight or scoring a goal or the dressing room, blah, 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 blah. The one thing that I missed, and I didn't really know what I missed, it was until I heard him say it, was the 24/7 focus. And I was like, yeah, that's me. And that's why being in management, again, a strange way, I've probably enjoyed it more than football, which is probably a big saying. But I'm just all about, you know, being on something 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And certainly management takes up an awful lot more of your time than just being a footballer. So certainly, yeah, I enjoyed it. But like I said, it's not as if I'm bouncing around laughing my heart out all day, every day. I just love focus in my life.
Your goal as a kid, and probably the goals of a lot of players in your squad, is to get to England. That's kind of the pinnacle for young players in Ireland today. As a young coach, is getting to England something that you're interested in, or does it change when, you know, coaching comes into it?
No, I've no plans to go back across. I've seen the stress and felt the stress that puts on your family. I couldn't be one of them guys living in England and seeing the kids once a week. I couldn't do that again. So, no, I'm here. Kids are going to live here. Going to go to school here, secondary school. So I've absolutely no plans or will or desire. So, yeah, if the Shells gig finished tomorrow, I know I laughed before about the barista thing, but I'd certainly need to find something that keeps me busy, because I won't be going to UK anytime soon.
It's a year ago this week. You spoke out in Dundalk and you said, this club means the world to me. I don't want to manage in any other League of Ireland club after this. It's a big call to make so early in your tenure. When did you kind of feel, or when did it dawn and you're like, this is a place I'm really happy with, this is the club for me?
Oh, I don't know, it's just gradually over the 18 months. Like, I've had some people ringing me going, what are you saying that for? What are you saying?
I'd say your agent probably wasn't doing
that. I don't have it. Do I have an agent? I don't. I'm never mad into the agent thing. Yeah, what are you saying that for? But I just enjoy going in every day. The staff are brilliant. They're staff that, you know, probably people bring their mates in and all. None of them were my mates. Like Skins, I didn't really know. Love him now. Mero, certainly didn't know. Love him. What a guy. Just brings something different to the whole room. And we're very lucky to have the two of them along with the rest. But Quinner, yeah, got on great with him when we were in the Irish team. I hadn't spoken to him in 20 years. Knew he was home, got me in with the 17s. Joey certainly didn't know him either, but I always heard Lukey speaking of him really fondly. So that's when I asked him, you know, I met for a coffee and I love Joe. Joe's now a friend for life. Davey Mack, again, didn't really know, so I didn't know anyone. And then the players have such a bond with them. That's why I'll be heartbroken in a way. I don't get too attached, but you know, I know lads want to go to the UK. Lads, whether it be anyway, everybody's speaking about Jack at the minute. Jack will want to go to the UK, so can I keep him forever? No. And when he does eventually say to me, Damien, I want to go to the UK, it'd be like ripping a bit of my soul out. But there's a lot of them here. There's 9 or 10 of them that have them ambitions, and possibly even more. They want to go away here. So I don't know, when did the Shells thing? I just feel, again, that sixth sense. I think the club's in a really good place. There's a lot of good people. Match days, bouncing in, seeing everyone. I don't really have the energy and the ambition to go and start all that anywhere else. For the past 18 months, I've put my heart and soul into it. I just want to keep building it. So when these people hear this podcast again, they'll be like, well, you've said it again. You're staying at Chelsea or die. Listen, here, you might want fucking 2 weeks' time. It's a results business, or you might just get sick of my shit. You might go, here, Duffer, go on your bike. Things change then. But I'm so happy here. And like I said, the best decision I've ever made professionally was coming here and taking this gig on.
It was something you had touched on before the cup final. You said, you wouldn't know a footballer lives in my house. You don't have any jerseys on the wall. You have, I think you said, one photo on the wall. Why is that? Are you just not sentimental, or is it just you don't want to be braggadocious? Or
I guess braggadocious. I was going to say I don't have an ego, but I know there's a lot of books out there. We all have egos, but I don't think mine's particularly big. So I think the only although I haven't seen it in a while. Elaine might have taken it down. The only photo in my in my house for the last 10, 15 years was the one which was mortifying at the time. We were playing Armenia and we were doing the national anthem. I think they changed where the flag was, and I was facing the total wrong way, which was fucking mortifying. I asked St. Ledger and I'm like, why didn't you tell me? He's like, oh, he just looked in the zone, Duffer. And I remember the game started and I was all over the gaffer, played awful because I just kept thinking what an idiot I looked. So
who framed that?
My wife. I think it's in the toilet, but like I said, I haven't seen. She might have just fucked it in the bin. But no, and speaking of stories, because listen, I know I'm too honest and probably give you too much insight into so I do have a lot of jerseys framed from back in the day when I lived, but I've never put them up again. I had them up over in England just because it's what you do when you're football, but no interest coming back here. So I have a lot of special jerseys, first cap, 100 cap, 50 cap, World Cup ones, whatever, up in the attic. So for instance, Shane the other day gets sent off. You're thinking, here we go again. Gets sent off after whatever, 7 minutes, and goes in really upset. I go up at half time, and here I'll say it because we were all kind of laughing about it. I took my jumper off and I offered him out. I was like, right, you're hitting people on the pitch. I said, I've never been in a fight in my life, Shane. I said, you can fight me now. Come on, let's have it. And so he turned me down, Shane. Thank God, because like I said, I don't know how to fight. And I'm not stupid either. If it was Paddy Barrett or Sean Boyd, I certainly wouldn't offer him out. So he turned me down, Farrell. Went in the next day to him and I said, Shane, you still turn me down, obviously in front of the lads. Listen, I give him a kick up the behind, blah, blah, blah. But with me, it's always followed by a hug and a kiss. So he turned the fight down, went into him Saturday morning. He turned me down again, but obviously that was a joke. So Monday, I just thought, listen, again, we all know Farrell now, don't we? We all love him, we all adore him. So I found one of these framed jerseys up in the attic. I was like, I'll bring him in one. And they're done unbelievable. Like I'd say they cost a good, a right few bob. So I thought, I'll bring him in, my Chelsea one. It's my only Chelsea one. And I thought, no, that's a bit braggadocious. It's your jersey. Like, it looks, you look a bit, it's all about me, ego, whatever. So I had a lovely Luis Enrique one from 2002. Beautifully done when I took his jersey after the game. So I had it all boxed up, beautiful, nice, brought it in Monday morning, and I wrote a message on it, obviously a Spanish jersey, Farrell, and I can't remember what I googled, you'll never walk alone in it, in Spanish, love, Duffer, big, whatever, kiss, 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 and I don't think he even googled what the thing meant, he was just staring at it. I don't even know what he thinks of the, I think he thought it was a joke, he probably overthinks life like me. So I think he was just staring at the joke. Okay, what does he mean? Am I supposed to take this home? What am I supposed to do? I was like, Farrell, it's for you. But he didn't really give any, so I don't know what the hell he thinks of it. So so yeah, them framed jerseys, I'm actually probably trying to give them away. I gave Lukey one last year, Roy Keane one. We beat them in the League Cup semi-final, went on to win it, Chelsea Man U. So I think that's above his bed, actually, because he's such an anorak. But Farrell, out in Finglas, there might be a Luis Enrique jersey up for sale, because I wouldn't say he has it on his wall. And Shane, if you're listening, you would have beaten me in a fight as well. So for next time.
You've goosed yourself now, because you're going to see a lot more red cards if there's signed jerseys going on walls afterwards.
Well, Paddy, I did ask, it filtered back to me. He was looking for a jersey from his sending off from a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah.
Maybe if you did jerseys for goals.
I haven't got that many, like I said. And listen, at the end of the day, it's their job, score goals and keep them out the other end. So, it was just a gesture with Shane. Probably a story I didn't need to tell, but I know probably people think I'm hard on the lads, or maybe hard on Shane after the other day, but Shane gets nothing but love and affection off me. And like I said, on Friday night, regardless of the red card, he's a wonderful player. And here, I just want the best for him, the team, and get the best out of him.
We're nearly there. We put out during the week to the supporters who want to send in their questions for you.
Yeah.
So we have a few questions to rattle through. Billy asked, how do you unwind on a Friday night?
Oof. Sometimes, and obviously we get a taxi home after, we might go to Mars for one pint of Guinness just to chat about the game. And you actually see, maybe it coincides with the crowds of Tolka. When we were doing it a year ago, Mars would be empty. You know, Mars in the corner of Tolka. Whereas now there's a real buzz out here. I'm not saying it's down to Tolka Park and Shelburne, but there must be some link, because it'd just be a nice little vibe and a buzz in there. And so we'd always near on do that, whether it be a Coke, a Club Orange, or a pint, or a Shandy, or a Zero, or whatever. I'd go home and I'd always have a nice bottle of red ready, and I'd watch the game. So some nights, like Saturday, I'm a write off, not because of my hangover, but I'd be getting to bed at 3:30 because I watch our game back. I'm probably a bit harsh on Elaine. I might come in and Elaine will be there and she wants to talk to me, but I just want to watch the game and she can feel it off me. So I'd probably come across a bit rude. So I'll apologise to my wife as well on there.
Gav asked, are you worried opposition fans might start charging your rent for living in their heads?
Oh, listen, it's a great Cranberry song anyway. And listen, it does mean a lot when the fans sing it. It honestly does. It touches me and what have you. Listen, I know the club and the team and the staff and myself annoy a lot of, and have probably gotten a lot of people's heads in this country. At times we've constantly tried to just create us against the world, and we've upset a lot of people. and not always our fault, but I just think people need to know we're back. I think it's a massive club. It's the one club, obviously, when I was over in England, it would have been early 2000s, Shells were the big team, weren't they? Winning year in, year out. So they're always, to me, would have been the big club, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, we've fallen out with a lot of people. Probably don't have many relationships in the League of Ireland. It's probably going to be harder for us than ever to win something and succeed. But here, it's us against the world, isn't it?
Shauna asked, for a lot of people at Shells, it's a family affair. So grandparents, parents bring their kids along. Have your family started to buy into Shells now?
Yeah, Woody loves it, probably more than Darris. Darris is GAA to the course. He loves the GAA. My dad there, it's brilliant for my dad. He always came over to the games over in the UK for years, and lived for it, you could say. And he certainly does now. So all the home games, he's there with a couple of buddies. The away ones, he tries to get to. I actually spoke to him yesterday and he was speaking about the game, and it's not only me. The first thing he spoke about was the officials. He was disgusted. I was like trying to get him to calm down on a Tuesday afternoon, speaking about the officials from a Friday night. So, no, it's a family affair for sure. I know what the club was built on, and we've tried to do that as well. My family have bought into it, and we are one big family down there anyway, staff and players.
Dowling asks, what's the favourite goal of your time at Shells so far?
Well, I'm still waiting on a last-minute winner. I know there's been late ones, 70, 75 minutes. I think Keen Levy against Bowes, which was nice. But still love a 95th one. Boom, see you later.
So would I, yeah.
Yeah.
Class.
I think we're due one. Oh, it's touchline stuff. But I don't know. Obviously, the game, the Bowes game in the Cup, that was nice. Nice atmosphere, early kickoff, sun out. That was like the perfect day. Waterford, the semi. So yeah, hard to pick. Obviously, always the home goals, but here, yeah, hard to pick. I'm just waffling here. It's can any goal? Really, I know we don't score a lot, but when they do go in, they all mean the same to me.
Siobhan asked, "You have to spend a week on holidays in either Newcastle or Saipan. Where would you pick?"
Oof, I'd go Saipan. reason being, I'd probably get killed in Newcastle. I used to be walking down the street over there and all I'd ever hear is, "Duff, you fucking shit, man." So that kind of haunts me a bit. And I was just walking down the street, try getting it on a Saturday when 60,000 people are saying it to you. So definitely Saipan, there was wonderful history there. And I didn't get to see a lot of it. All I saw was my bedroom and a rather firm football pitch. So Saipan.
Barry asked, if you could play one game over, which one would you play again?
Which one?
Yeah, if you could replay one game.
let's go to cup final. Would I change? Like we spoke about as a staff afterwards, we tried to take the whole, I guess, occasion out of it. So the way we prepared for it would be exactly the same. Personnel, people are probably, I know fans are like, oh, why is he playing there? The team more or less picked itself. We were running on probably 12 players by the end of last season. So even Farrell playing left wing back, he had to play left wing back. And you forget, I always tell Shane this now, you know, really embrace the defensive work. He'd be the best wing back in the country because he has so much to offer. But probably that. Just to, okay, maybe can we change the result in some way? So I go with that.
Mary said, thank you for lifting this club. You've brought so much joy to so many Shells people. How much joy have you gotten out of the experience?
Like I said, a strange one. It's not kind of comedy show you're going into every day. It's proper work. It's a intense environment. But yeah, going back into the staff room, I've had some amazing laughs with the staff and here with the players as well. But I wouldn't even, again, call it joy. It's just going home and just, I don't know, what's the saying? Feeling content and like you're part of something and that maybe you're creating something, I don't know, and it's happening organically. You know, there's ways that you can build, rebuild football clubs again, maybe with money, etc., etc. Whereas I think we're doing it the right way, and maybe hopefully if we do get there, you'll enjoy it more because it's took longer. We've coached, we've built relationships, and it's stayed real and real to the core of Shelburne. So happy, just really content with it, I guess.
Now we're nearly there. This is the very last bit. Every time we have a player on.
There's one more.
Oh, go on, sorry.
Brian's question.
This is going to be a bad one, isn't it?
No, it's one that every time we tease a player signing, everyone will reply, please announce Wezzo. So no matter who it is, people will be disappointed. We're not signing Wezzo, Brian asks, or are we?
Oh, so I can't believe I'm announcing Wezzo's retirement form. Here, like I said, and I think people have got to know me by now, I'm a dreamer. I dream of Europe this year, but first and foremost, let's stay up. But let's get on to Wes. Of course, I wanted to sign him. He finished, so it would have been last summer, wouldn't it? So there was, what, 3-4 months remaining. Exchange a few texts, we exchanged a few phone calls. I think he did think about it, but probably not for long. But what he told me in the last phone call was he's finished. I can't believe I'm retiring Wes here. He didn't want to make that statement and come out with them, you know, we've all done it. I'm glad I'd like to take this person, that person, and what a great career. So Wes has finished, but I did try to sign him, and it would have been even just to come in a day, 2 a week, train with the lads. Okay, what can you give me on a Friday night? I was obviously going to ask him to do for free. Because he loves the club so much and he potentially would have, but I never even got to the money stage. So sorry, Brian.
Disappointing. But look, at least now we can draw a line under it.
Yeah,
it's finished.
At least we won't reply to
big announcement now, Wes Hoolan's retired.
Yeah, so
that's your headline you're trying to avoid.
Yeah.
So stop writing it under every single post every time we go to announce a signing.
Keith McDarby asked as well, were you ever tempted to sign him after his performance in the charity game last season? And I think he was serious.
Yeah, Keith's more about, I guess, style over substance, about looking good rather than, you know, offering something. So, but if he thinks he played well, leave him at it.
Do you want to ask that last one?
Conan Byrne asks, are we still mates?
From the weekend? Absolutely, here. I don't mean to fall out with the world and I'm not trying to, but like I said, I'm probably too honest, probably show too much, but I'd rather just speak what I'm feeling. So absolutely no problem, Conan. It's not on Twitter and I don't read the papers anyway or the media and what have you. So I think it was maybe a couple of lads' skins coming in telling me everything that's going on. So no, that wasn't having a dig. It was just bringing up the point of how well Connor is. And I'm very respectful of the guys that speak about the game. I've done punditry and it's first and foremost a very hard gig. You obviously have to give your opinion. Some people might agree with it, some people might not. And I have to say, that wasn't a slant to me saying, you know, Connor's been the best. Clarkey's gone down to Galway and been brilliant as well. But it was business that I thought had to be done. I absolutely stand over it, and I'd like to think now people are going, yeah, okay, it was probably good business because Conor has been outstanding. But Conan, yeah, great. Keep up the good work.
Will we finish up with the all-time teammates?
The all-time teammates.
Yeah, so 12 questions can be from any team you played in, any dressing room, yeah, international or club.
Do you listen to it when your players do it?
I think I listen to Jack's one. If I have a free half hour, 40 minutes.
Yeah, that must cause a lot of debates, score settling amongst the players.
Yeah, I don't know what it causes inside there, but because when I walk into the dressing room, it's like walking into a library. I'm like, am I that bad a guy here? I might sit down and try and have a chat. I'm like, fuck, I'm out here. So yeah, they don't give me out when I go in, unless I get them drunk. It's cost me 2-3 grand. Like I said, paddy on the double whiskies and somebody's pinching me in the breast. So otherwise, they don't talk to me.
We actually asked Jack which of the staff members would you fancy yourself against in game of head tennis.
I'm in training, so we've rolled the tech ball table out, and I've been meaning to do him the last Tuesdays. I don't think he realises what he's getting in for. I will let you know when I beat him, because over at Celtic, like I said, Woody, Elaine, Darcy, putting Woody ahead of Elaine and Darcy there. When the kids moved home, I wasn't rushing home every day. I lived at Lennoxtown and I just played tech ball every day, and I would play all the first team players, the Celtic first team players, and none of them could beat me. So Jack, he's got a bold task ahead of him.
Called out.
He's throwing it down, yeah. Who was the last person you'd want to be stuck beside on a long bus journey of all your teammates ever?
I guess I left a bit on Matty earlier, didn't I? I'm saying that because he was always just opening his post. He'd bring away like his fan mail, and he was an Ipswich legend. He'd just be writing it and reading it and writing back. Amazing, like, but just, I was like, put it away, would you? So it'd be Matty, or I'd go Kenny Cunningham. You've probably seen him on RTÉ, and he obviously does the commentating now. He doesn't sleep and he doesn't show up. So here, Kenny, love you, mate, but I used to room. I asked to leave in the end. I think Brian was the manager. I said, Brian, I want to get a room of my own. I can't room with Kenny anymore. He'd turn on a movie at midnight. I remember I was away in Cyprus, and it was just after midnight, and he was sitting on the end of the bed, and he put the Green Mile on. Green Mile's 3 hours long. So
full volume, like?
No, just sitting there, and he'd be chatting over show with Duffer, what about this, John Coffey? I'm like, fuck me, we're playing Cyprus tomorrow. So I would go with Kenny, because even though I'm chatting a lot of crap here and waffling, I'm not a big talker. I don't like speaking, so Kenny talks a lot, so I'll give him a miss.
Kenny Cunningham was actually on the commentary for
Rovers game
for Paddy Barrett's red card, and he missed the red card because he was talking about the parking at the Iron.
Yeah. They didn't know he got sent off. Incredible.
Who's the quickest player you've played with?
The quickest, I was going to say Sinclair Armstrong. He's one of my Rovers 15s. He's gone to QPR. Just incredible. We'd, anywhere the ball was on the pitch, we'd just get him to press, because he was like Usain Bolt. Quickest player I played with, I don't know, he never looked quick, probably. Arjen Robben just had this mad running gait. He just used to carry one arm beside him. So I guess he's coming to my mind just because, like I said, didn't look quick, but will just dip inside, or if he's on the left, just go down the line, but still pull away from people. An ugly gait, probably just as ugly as mine. So I'll go with Robbie.
The easiest person to wind up?
Again, I can't think player, so I'll just go Mero now. He gets nailed every day, just about the level of Portuguese football, the level of Portuguese wine, and the level of Portuguese food. So he just bites every time, straight away. So I can't believe he's still going for it. So I'll just go with Mero.
You have a 90-minute penalty to win the league. Who do you want to take it?
I was so pleased for Jack the other day, because it's his first one in senior football, which is here. It's big. So that was massive. So I'm totally confident in going forward. The boy, did he miss recently?
I don't think so.
Not off the top of my head.
So anyway, I'm trying to lick up to Farrell now. He's been amazing at Penno's. So sounds. I won't go with Fowler because it sounds like I'm trying to lick up with him, but I would say Fowler.
Not Robbie Keane, no?
I'd go with Robbie or even later in my career. I'm just throwing names out now. I don't know. Danny Murphy. Even Melbourne. Was that my last club away from Ireland? I had David Villa for... I think I played him for 4 games. He was supposed to say for with 8, but he had enough of the Aussies. He just did a legger. But his finishing was absolutely elite. And sorry, I hit you with another one. Lee Griffiths, incredible finisher.
The nicest player you've met in your career?
The nicest? Was it go off nice? Nice for me is never a compliment anyway. It's just a bit bland. It's like, ooh, you're nice. Like, if somebody called me nice, I'd be devastated. But nice, there was proper men in the Fulham dressing room, but good guys that you go for a meal, watch the football, have a glass of wine. So I'd call them top guys. I don't want to disrespect them to call them nice. It was the likes of Aaron Hughes, Breda Hangeland, that whole dressing room, they were just top guys.
The most vain.
The most vain. I should have been prepared for this. I can just, I have the memory of a goldfish with stuff like that. I don't know, I'll just go off the shells one, I guess. I think Matty knows he's good looking.
Well, we would have done this whole thing off shells players if I knew you'd answered them.
Yeah, no, but I actually texted him the other day. It sounded like I was coming on to him. I was telling him about his smile because he can't get booked again. I was like, here, just smile at him, whatever. It'll get you out of that. I think he's a good-looking lad. It killed me when my missus actually mentioned that he's a good-looking lad. that killed me. But I think he knows he's good-looking as well. He doesn't show, but I think he knows.
We had one of the teammates was who's the first player to slide into Owen Smith's DMs after a match.
Yeah, looking for photos of themselves.
Who do you think that would be?
Is it Jack?
No, never Jack. Mm-hmm.
It's not Matty, is it?
Cam.
Oh my God. Right, well, and the dressing room, well, they know it now, don't they?
The players have voted it. Anyone who's been on has voted, so.
I don't know why he'd be first on. He's no George Clooney, anyway.
I'm raging that we didn't redo these and just done it off the current squad. I didn't think we'd get the answers we were looking for. Who's the most difficult player to understand?
It's the Shane Farrell podcast, isn't it? Without a doubt. Till the day I die, I won't understand him. And I've told him this to his face. He knows it. So I haven't got a Scooby-Doo how, what to say to him. So it's best just to text him and you might get a bit more.
Who's a liability on a night out?
I think Coyler and I don't think they get in trouble. You wouldn't mess with them anyway. But Coyler and Paddy just get a bit loyal. It could have been them pinching me now that I think of it. I don't know. But the more they drink, they get a bit livelier and just like Wright said, Fred, the two of them just banging about together. But like I said, I don't think they get into trouble because who would mess with them? I'd probably go Dervin because I believe this is hearsay. A night out last year. I believe he got kidnapped. For real. So, yeah.
Who was the teacher's pet?
The teacher's pet? Well, I think the guys have always said Matty. But I put that to right in the Belfield at UCD Bowl a couple of weeks ago. So, teacher's pet... I don't know, I don't think I have it. I shout at lads when they need shouting at, and I don't say anything to them when they're, you know, taking care of the ball, working really hard, so it's very simple. I don't know, will I go Lukey just because I don't think I've ever had a proper go off Lukey, whereas I think everyone else I've had a crack off, which I surprised myself with because, trust me, I'd be a very passive, quietly spoken guy. I think my wife might say different. So when, you know, a half time or an individual and I'm having a shiffy, I do go home at night and I was like, was that really you? But I'll go with Lukey because I've never gone mad at him.
Everyone else goes with Lukey as well.
Yeah, captain. It's obviously the easy answer.
Okay.
The answer for 2 years.
Yeah.
That's it. I think we're there, are we?
That's everything.
That's us. Anything to add?
That's the lot. Damien, thanks so much for your time.
No problem. I will see you Friday night at Talca Park.
You will.
Up the Reds.
Up the Reds.
This podcast was brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. For all the latest sports news, visit otbsports.com. Rest in the sunset, way out on the sea. Oh, carry my loved one.
The days are longer, the calendar is filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grüns. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, so I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing, they're easy to toss in my bag on the go, plus they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA and FSA, eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grüns.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.